Mud Podcast presents.
All right, this is The Choice Is Yours. This is our monthly show with Danny and Doro today.
But today's our third show in our series about milk. And we have talked in the last previous episodes about the milk industry and how cooperatives and lobbyists and banks have been tricking dairy farmers essentially into becoming bigger and producing more just to lower their quality of their milk. So we had talked about the health impacts of dairy in general. And basically my takeaway is that if you're not specifically dairy intolerant, that milk is not necessarily bad for you. Just everything in moderation. You cannot drink too much of it or eat too much of it. And it could be detrimental to your health if you do. So everything with a little moderation, I think, is my takeaway here.
Yeah.
What about you?
We were surprised to realize that drinking too much milk can be detrimental to the bones.
Right.
Which that, you know, they told us that calcium was for the bones.
It's propaganda, man. It was all propaganda.
Okay, the myth is
from
debunked.
Yes.
Hey,
yes.
We're not saying it's not good for the bones. We're saying
too much
is actually bad for the bones.
And then, you know, the health impacts of it not being a good quality product has its own issues, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, you got to take into account that non-organic milk contains all types of contaminants. So make wise choices.
Yeah, the main contaminant that I really want to avoid that is in milk is antibiotics.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I don't want my body to become resistant so that next time I have a tooth infection that I actually need the antibiotics, they would actually work.
Right. Imagine actually really needing it and making the choice to take them and it's like...
Well, that's the funny thing is that I haven't taken antibiotics for like 20 years or something. So last year when I had a tooth infection mm-hmm. and they gave me antibiotics, that was amazing how it worked.
Oh, my. Fresh and
that,
ready.
That was like in half an hour, the pain was gone. I was like, wow,
oh my
that
God,
thing works.
Western medicine at its finest, you know.
Yes.
Yeah.
But only if you don't take it too often, right, as we
right.
know now.
And avoid them in your lifestyle choices, what you do. So.
And so if you eat products like milk that have antibiotics in it because they give too much of it to the cows, you may just become resistant. And next time you have a tooth pain, doesn't work. And you stay with your pain.
And we also said about health that whole milk is always better than the fat-free or low-fat ones. And we talked about the environmental impacts of the dairy industry. And we had the pleasure of talking to Cody Nicholson-Stratton from Foggy Bottoms Boys. And he was explaining to us about all the things in California and Humble and their farm and how it works in such a beautifully regenerative way. So thanks, Cody, for coming on and sharing all of your amazing wisdom and hope. Honestly, I left that conversation feeling so hopeful about the farming industry. So that was really beautiful.
Yep.
Yeah. And so in this third part, we're going to be looking into milk alternatives. And last month, we left it kind of halfway with the environmental aspects. So we're just going to pick up where we left off.
All right. So let's have in mind that cows are supposed to be grazers. They're supposed to eat grass. This is what the anatomy of their digestive system is made for. But unfortunately, most cows in the States are raised in feedlots and they eat corn and soy.
And we already talked about corn in this last episode, so let's get into soy a little bit more.
Yes, soybean accounts for 13% of the cow feed. So what can we say about soy?
Well, almost 80% of the world's soybean crop is fed to livestock. And to produce soy, land is being converted from forests, savannas, and grasslands in Africa and South America and endangering valuable habitats and species whilst putting at risk traditional local livelihoods.
Yeah, the biggest producer of soy is Brazil, and the largest importer of soy for animal food is China and then Europe, which is driving much of the expansion of soy. I wanted to talk about a place in Brazil called El Cerrado. The Cerrado.
Cerrado.
The Cerrado. it's a striking example of how unsustainable soy production threatens nature. Through the Cerrado, Yeah. So though the Cerrado has not attracted as much attention than as the Amazon, the conservation value of the region is enormous.
Yeah, and it's grasslands and shrubbery. You'll find large animals like the jaguar, the maned wolf, giant anteaters, giant armadillos, marsh deer, and hundreds of bird species. And there are also all over – there's over 10,000 species of plants there, almost half of which are found nowhere else in the world.
Yeah, that's a vast forested savanna. And today – so that's about 1 million hectares. And today – half of it has been lost, largely driven by livestock and soybean farming.
Oh, that's devastating.
Yeah.
There was also humans who used to live on this land in Brazil and Argentina, and their land was taken away from them by more influential people and corporations just to grow soy.
Yeah, and where are they going to go if they lose their little land? They're going to go to the favelas, the ghetto, the – what do you call them? Yeah. And they're going to have this poor type of life with lack of education and violence. I mean, the consequences of growing so much corn are
pushes people out away from lifestyle.
Yeah. And in Argentina, for example, soybean covers about 50% of the agricultural lands. And big surprise, several activists from this marginalized group, they have been harassed and even killed. So this, and this is not unique to Argentina, obviously. That happens a little bit everywhere.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. Another important environmental impact of soybean production is how agrochemicals may wither non-genetically modified crops and contaminate water sources and expose people to toxic substances.
And same as for corn, remember that it is not soy to make your tofu, right? This is the animal feed for big milk. It's cow feed for the European and American cows so that we can have cheap cheese, milk, and yogurt because we deserve it.
And what are you going to do without your cheese, Doro? Don't act like you could survive without it. And so we were saying that dairy cow feed consists of 39% corn, 13% soy, and 16% dried distiller grains. I had never heard of that. What is that?
Yeah, so dried distiller's grain, they are a major co-product of the production of ethanol. The, you know, the one they mixed within the gasoline? Well, you have to grow that corn to make that ethanol, and that's a byproduct.
Mm-hmm. And dried distiller grains are good for the cows because it is fermented, but it also contains a lot of sulfur, which can diminish the shelf life of the meat and possibly the milk too.
Yeah.
And it increases the risk of nerve disease for the cows.
It's so strange to try to feed strange byproducts to a cow, knowing that it might not even be good for them or for their milk. Why not just go to pasture? Just like Foggy Bottom's boys that we had on the show last month. They're just, the cows are just grazing grass, what they are made for. A lot of local farmers actually are doing this, so it is possible. So why don't we just do that?
It seems like the simpler option, right?
Yeah.
The healthier, the simpler, more economical, environmentally friendly, like all the things. But I guess at the end of the day, it's the big corporations and the financial interests that are kind of spoiling the farming system for the rest of us. So
yeah. All right, let's take a break. Talking about other dairy, then we'll talk about other dairy products. But right now,
I don't seem to have access to this first one, Hugh Masekela.
Okay, let's see if I have it. Oh, no, because I can't play it from my phone. Whatever, let's pass it.
Yeah.
Pass it? Yeah. Hold it up to the mic. That'll still work.
No. Okay. The sound is going to be too bad.
Let's get into yogurt.
Huh? You want to play a little...
Transition.
All right, so let's get into yogurt.
Yeah, yogurt. This is a popular dairy product made by fermenting the milk in a bacterial yogurt culture. The bacteria ferment lactose... Oh, yeah. The bacteria ferment lactose and produces lactic acid. This causes the proteins in milk to curdle and result in this tangy yogurt taste and texture. Yogurt can be made from different types of milk.
Yogurt with live probiotic strains tend to contain less lactose than other dairy products. And it's due to the probiotic bacteria breaking down some of the lactose during the fermentation process. And some individuals with lactose intolerant find that they can actually tolerate yogurt in moderation.
Yeah, many types of brands of yogurts contain added sugar. So be careful. This is especially true for some with the low-fat varieties of yogurt. You look at the ingredients and you see that it's actually an excess of sugar, and it's been linked, as we know, to higher risk of chronic health problems like diabetes and obesity. Mm-hmm. And isn't that funny? Because you want to go healthy by going low-fat, but actually, okay, once again, we've said it 1,000 times on that show, fat doesn't make you fat. This is a myth that they put in our mind in the 60s to sell oil, but instead of butter. But fat doesn't make you fat, but low-fat sugar is full of bad sugar that's bad for your diabetes. Javi's laughing. What do you have to say, Mr. Energy? Fat makes you fat? What do you say?
I'm happy seeing you shine.
Okay, that was vague, but yeah. I hear it. So many types of brands of yogurt actually contain added sugar, unfortunately, and this is especially true for some of the low-fat varieties. Consuming excess sugar has been linked to a higher risk of chronic health problems like diabetes and obesity. You just kind of went over that. Okay, great. So non-dairy yogurt is available and made from a plant source such as almonds, coconut cream, oats, cashews, or soy. And like dairy yogurt, these non-dairy options are made from bacterial cultures. And many varieties have a large amount of added sugar. So check the nutritional information before choosing one.
Kefir, it's another cultured food that commonly comes from dairy. For centuries, people have made kefir using kefir grain and cow's milk. It is also possible to make it with goat or sheep milk. Kefir grains resemble some little tiny cauliflower florets.
And manufacturers add these grains to the milk to ferment it, and then they remove them. The remaining product is then kefir. And the grains are reusable in the next batch. That's nice. And they can also make kefir dairy-free by fermenting the grains with water or coconut water and sugar. And you can also do this at home.
Yeah, it's kind of like kombucha. You get the base and you just multiply it. On the other hand, commercial producers make yogurt by heating a yogurt mix, then cooling it, then adding the helpful bacteria. Current standard procedures and regulation for yogurt production. Okay, so that requires the addition of starter culture. The two main ones are Streptococcus thermophilus, and the other one is Lactobacillus bulgaricus. That's what makes the yogurt.
And apparently these are the best starter cultures due to their symbiotic relationship between the two species.
And both kefir and yogurt can help populate the gut with good bacteria. That's why we like it. The difference is that kefir contains a wider variety of bacteria and also some yeast. And as we said, the yogurt has only two types of bacteria.
Both products also contain a wide range of vitamins and minerals. And kefir may have antimicrobial, antifungal properties. It may help the immune system, be anti-allergenic and anti-tumor, or be beneficial for lactose malabsorption.
Oh, yeah. So we were saying you can make your own yogurt or your own kefir, actually, if you can find online the supplies that you'll need, you know, those bacteria stuff. But we were thinking, you know, maybe somebody is doing kefir at home.
Someone's got to be doing it in Humboldt. Come on.
Okay, so you out there who is doing kefir at home, please call us to tell us more about it because we have never done it.
Yeah, but we're interested. I'll speak for myself. I don't know. I make kombucha. I'd love to make the jump.
Right?
Yeah. Just need someone to hold my hand. I need someone with the grains, you know? And gotta find someone.
Yeah, and maybe you have too much grain, because if it's like kombucha, it must multiply like crazy. And at one point,
right?
I mean, I guess you put it in your compost and you're fine. But maybe you want to give it away. Maybe some other callers want some kefir grain, and we can't. Oh, we have a caller. All right, let's see.
I put my thumbs up because I want some grains.
Oh, okay. Okay, all here right. We go. There's already two people around that table who want. I'm not counting myself because I don't know, it's too acidic for me. I don't really like kefir much.
I love it.
You love it.
I love it.
Right?
Yeah, we're all different. I buy it whenever I can. And so, yeah, once a person has fermented the milk or other liquids using kefir grains, they can strain it and remove those grains and use them for the next batch. And it's just super cost effective. So share those grains.
Yeah. And so because it's fermented food, that contains also one thing called histamine. And some people are intolerant to histamine and they can experience symptoms such as
like diarrhea, headaches, bloating, abdominal pain, GI issues, hives, itchy skin, congestion, low blood pressure, flushing, inflammation. And these are just a slew of symptoms. So look into it if you need some more information.
I mean, you feel it, you know, you eat yogurt, you don't feel really good. Mm-hmm. Try it two or three times and then, okay, mm-hmm. yogurt is not for you. Fine. Mm-hmm. Yes. Hello, caller.
Good morning. Thank you for another educational program. Kombucha is started with a mushroom, kombucha mushroom.
Right.
That's your starter. I happen to know that because I had a friend mail me one, and the post office seized it because it refused to send it through the mail. They said it was a hazardous package. That was during 9/11. It's hilarious.
Wow.
Yeah. What a government. I wanted to bring up a point about Brazil.
I had images of the mushroom like invading, being the
taking over the post office.
I guess that's what they're afraid of. I don't know.
Well, there are some suggestions that mushrooms, because they can travel through space, that they are the primordial source of our intellect. That's a whole different topic.
And
call us back and let's talk about that.
Yeah.
Then read Terence McKenna's Food of the Gods.
Yes.
You are what you eat, folks. Whatever you put in your mouth.
Thanks for saying it.
Yes. Try to deal with it. So be kind to your body. It is your temple.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Thanks for calling.
Thank you so much.
And apparently we have a second caller. Hello, caller.
What I was going to talk about was yogurt. I started making my own. I mean, I made it in the past many years ago when I had those little cups that, you know, you can use.
Uh-huh.
But you could never carry it on, you know, from one generation to the next. There was always a breakdown in texture or whatever. And I finally read a Serious Eats article, and it kind of was the magic directions, because you have to heat it to a very specific temperature and try to hold it there for a period of time, and then reduce it to another pretty specific temperature. And then it can kind of sit on the counter for a day or two to add sourness or whatever complexity of flavor that you like before refrigerating it. And I have made it work to, let's see, four iterations before it gets too thin or too sour or too something.
Okay, not bad.
I initially started doing this because I'm sick of buying yogurt in plastic.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And that was my impetus for doing it. And it's half the price of yogurt, you know, that you buy in the store. If you buy a half gallon of milk, you get, you know, a half gallon of yogurt, and it's half the price. So it's a win-win all the way around. So I just wanted to add that to the
mix.
Cool. And if you overheat it, as I find I've done a few times, you get, it's thick and nice, but it's also a little ropey. So you need to avoid overheating the milk initially.
Yeah. Well, that's interesting what you said. With a gallon of milk, you're making a gallon of yogurt.
Yeah, pretty much.
So you're transforming a product that's sometimes not as good for the health, but you're transforming it into something that's really good. Mm-hmm. But you keep the one-to-one ratio. That's very interesting.
Good.
I never thought of that.
Right.
Because as we see for butter and for cheese, totally different.
Yeah,
exactly. And I use whole milk because I like the taste much better than half and half, or, you know, half 2% or anything like that.
Oh, yeah, it can be
done. I think you get a thinner product as well. So, but there is a lot of research now saying that, you know, full fat things are actually better for you than low fat.
Yeah, we said that in the past show we did. Cool.
Yeah.
Hey, thank you so much for calling and for making your own yogurt. We need more people like you.
One of many things. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
KMUD is a community radio station in the Redwood region of Northern California. Donate to support people-powered radio at kmud.org.
So butter is also a dairy product. It is made from the fat and the protein component of churned cream. Butter is primarily composed of roughly 80% of the milk fat, 17% of water, and one or two milk solids, which includes the vitamins, the minerals, and the lactose. And they also add some salt.
And so I guess the real question is, butter good for you? And let's just assume that the quality is there and that you're eating it in moderation. And let's look at some of the health benefits. Butter is rich in fat-soluble vitamins like A, D, E, and K. And minerals such as calcium, phosphorus, and selenium. And these nutrients support bone health, immune function, and overall well-being.
Also, heart health. Some studies suggest that butter may improve heart health by increasing levels of the good cholesterol and reducing inflammation. However, it's important to note that butter is high in saturated fats, so moderation is key. Antioxidant properties also, butter is full of antioxidants such as beta-carotene and vitamin E, which protect the cell from damage caused by the free radical. Eat butter to look younger.
Ooh, I love that. We should really push that messaging. And so also grass-fed butter is a good source of conjugated linoleic acid, or CLA. And that's a fatty acid with anti-inflammatory and antioxidant properties. And it may help reduce the risk of chronic diseases such as cancer and heart disease.
Also, and very importantly, your gut health. Yeah, butter contains butyrate, a short-chain fatty acid that promotes gut health by nourishing the beneficial bacteria in the colon.
I love that. And like all dairy products, the quality is the most important. And so choosing organic goes a long way. So we talked last episode about how the PFAs or the forever chemicals that are used in the agricultural farming is stored in the animal fat. So eating a high fat product like butter, it really actually matters that it's organic.
And there's also annatto that is sometimes added to the U.S. butter manufacturers without declaring it on the label. Because the U.S. allows butter to have an undisclosed, flavorless, and natural coloring agent. Whereas all other foods in the U.S. must label their coloring agent. The preservative lactic acid is sometimes added instead of salt as a flavor enhancer. And sometimes additional diacetyl is added to boost the buttery flavor. In the U.S., both ingredients can be listed simply as natural flavors.
Those darn natural flavors. They're so sneaky. It's
never know what's
so
underneath those two words.
Yeah. And some people choose to stray away from animal-based milks because they have sensitivities or allergies or they're just lactose intolerant. And for these sensitive individuals, dairy products can wreak havoc on their immune system and gastrointestinal systems.
People have also shifted to more plant-based foods for ethical reasons, health reasons, as well as impact of the dairy and meat farms that it can have on the environment. One study showed that dairy milk uses almost 9 times more land resources to be produced than plant-based counterparts.
The tweak, though, is that there are many places in the world where it is only possible to raise cows and not almonds or soy. So we are not saying that there shouldn't be cows at all, but it might be clever to only have them where milk is that you can produce.
I think we're also saying if you're going to eat milk, consume milk, you'd rather do it as a yogurt or kefir.
With all the beneficial bacteria, it seems like, why not?
But also have in mind that the cows, they're not all bad. First of all, they're beautiful. when they are on green grass at this season. They're just beautiful.
It's true. It's
we should
true.
Have them just for aesthetic matter in this world. But also, they have a function. They do take care of the prairies and the meadows. But we don't need them everywhere, and we don't need them in feedlots.
Right, right.
All right. And so, yes, there are alternatives. Goat, for example.
Right.
Let's talk about goat.
What a Humboldt topic.
Yeah.
Let's get into it.
So worldwide, more people consume goat milk product than cow milk product.
Kind of crazy, right?
Yeah, because we are with our Westerners' point of view on the world. But actually,
the whole world's not drinking cow milk. What a shocker.
The whole world is not our way of life, actually. So while both milk products have significant benefits, there are situations in which people prefer and choose goat milk.
Yeah, goats are smaller and consume significantly less feed than cows, making them much easier to keep in developing countries. And in countries other than the United States, the flavor of goat milk is actually preferred over cow milk.
And research also suggests that goat's milk may enhance the body's ability to absorb important nutrients from other foods. In contrast, the cow milk is known to interfere with the absorption of key minerals like iron and copper when consumed in the same meal.
Another reason some people choose goat's milk over cow's milk has to do with digestibility. All animal-derived milks contain some lactose, which is the natural milk sugar, and some people just don't have the ability to fully digest it.
But goat's milk is slightly lower in lactose than the cow's milk, about 12% less per cup. And in fact, it becomes even lower in lactose when cultured into yogurt. So people with mild lactose intolerance, therefore, may find goat's milk dairy somewhat less disruptive to digestion than cow's milk.
Mm-hmm. And in terms of digestive health, goat's milk has another feature that outperforms cow's milk, the higher presence of prebiotic carbohydrates, which help nourish the beneficial bacteria living in our gut ecosystem.
These carbohydrates are called oligosaccharides, mm-hmm. and they are the same type of carbohydrate that is present in human breast milk. And they are responsible for helping to support the good bacteria in baby's digestive tract.
And other health benefits of goat milk, other than it being easier to digest, are just less risk of milk allergies and potentially better heart health. Goat milk has more potassium, calcium, magnesium, phosphorus, vitamin A, and protein than cow's milk does. And I hadn't really had a lot of goat cheese before moving up here.
Really?
Yeah, it just really wasn't a big... If I did, it was like in a nice meal out. You know, at a nice place, and I got a goat cheese salad, and it was like a specialty something. You know, I didn't know how to cook with it or eat it at home or buy it or know what to get or not to get or what flavors there were and options. And I was just eating regular cow cheese, and I come up to Humboldt, and it was like, oh my God, there's this delectable, amazing, fresh cheese made from friends and farmers that I know. And it's like, don't tell anyone.
Yeah. Don't tell anyone. Don't say it on the radio.
You want it all to yourself?
Yeah, it's a trade. There we go.
I didn't give him money. But what about you? Did you have goat cheese before you
came? Oh, my God. I grew up in goat cheese.
Oh,
Our neighbors were doing goat cheese. So I just, I loved it. But that's funny because my husband, they had goats in his farm. Like his parents actually had goats. They were quite hippies at the time. And he hates goat cheese for growing into it. And I love goat cheese for growing into it.
Oh, that's so funny.
Yeah.
So, so funny.
Talking about cheese, we didn't really talk about it when we were talking about cow milk. But, you know, that's my biggest problem on that show. I don't consume milk or anything, but I do consume cheese. Oh, my God. It seems like I can't live without cheese. I'm French. Come on. What am I going to do?
It's in your blood.
Okay. They use 10 pounds of milk to make a pound of cheese. So consider that the environmental impact is 10 times what it looks like. Because it's – so I think that show is going to have at least I'm thinking of it.
Yeah. Okay. No promise to make changes,
but we're
thinking about it.
That's the thing with that show. You know, we're not saying we're perfect and we know everything.
No.
Far from it.
No.
But it's here to raise questions and
challenge
our behaviors.
Yeah.
I'll tell you more later. Did I actually change my behavior? We'll see.
All right. So we're going to go into the environmental impacts. And over the past 20 years, many scientific studies have drawn attention to the fact that a diet changed towards a more plant-based one could have larger positive effects on the ecosystems. And these effects can be created by freeing up large areas of land, as fewer animals must be provided with feed, which gives more space for other organisms, and specifically to grow less greedy types of proteins like beans.
Yeah, and that's not just us saying it, that a plant dietary shift would lead to reduced greenhouse gas emission and improved health. This is the UN Climate Panel. And sorry, but I do trust that panel. I know that in the States, 50% of the people are still doubting of it, but I trust it. In their report from 2019, they said that a diet with little or no elements of meat and dairy products can lead to a large reduction of greenhouse emission and land use.
Mm.
Yes.
And plant-based milks are generally associated with lower environmental impacts, like from their greenhouse gas emissions and water use, than cow's milk, with the notable exception of the higher water footprint of almond milk. They say it takes between 23 to 100 gallons. And I saw some statistics online. I mean, it was that number was all over the place, but I saw up to 1,000 gallons of water per gallon of almond milk. Yeah. And I don't know how confident I am to say that on the show. Let's stick from 23 to 100 gallons of water to produce a gallon of almond milk, while cow's milk requires around 628 gallons per gallon.
So maybe just to have in mind, we could say like cow milk consume maybe six times more water than than almond milk.
Sure.
Okay. Hey, we have a caller, I think.
I would love to say that making almond milk is so easy and so delicious. And I may have missed a little bit of the environmental water impacts that you guys are referring to, but as far as making almond milk, it's so easy. It's 3-to-1, 3 cups of water, 1 cup of almonds.
Nice.
And if you soak your almonds at home at first, it activates all the, enzymes and just makes that almond like feel alive and ready to sprout and such. And you can sprout them and then blend them. And if you want, you can even just like squeeze off the little skin and it makes it smoother, or just blend it with it and it's delicious. So I don't know if you guys had mentioned that, but it's such an easy thing to make at home.
Oh, that's amazing. Would you make that the same way with other nuts too, or just with almonds? Could you make walnut milk or something like that?
All alternative milks are pretty much generally a 3-to-1 ratio. So a cashew milk or a hazelnut milk or pecan milk.
Pretty great ratio. Yeah.
And, or oat milk, is also similar. Again, same thing. If you want to soak the nuts first, it just makes it a little bit more nutritionally available,
Ladies,
I appreciate everything you're sharing. Have a beautiful day.
You too.
Yeah, so we were talking about the amount of water to grow almond. They're always saying, maybe you guys have heard that, 1 gallon of water to grow one single almond. And actually, that would be just the water to water it. But there, if you consider the water falling from the sky and the rivers and stuff, it's considered, I don't know, man, with those numbers, I don't know. But okay, just for the game of it, it's considered that to grow one almond, you need 3.2 gallons of water.
It's just a visually striking,
yeah,
It sounds scary, but if we put it into some perspective, one tomato also takes the same amount of water. One walnut takes 5 gallons of water. A head of broccoli takes 5.5 gallons, and one orange. Doro, how many gallons of water do you think it takes to grow an orange?
I would have thought not much.
I would have thought the same, but 13 gallons of water for one orange.
And so if you look at all those numbers, it seems like the most water efficient is broccoli, because it's like a head of broccoli is
big.
It's a
good amount of food.
It's only, and it's only 5 gallons. So if you want to save water, eat broccoli.
Okay, that's a good campaign.
We have a caller.
Hey, I wanted to address the almond question in water.
Uh-huh.
So I'm in Central Valley.
Oh.
And she saw the report that they had on 60 Minutes about water use in almonds. And she said they do not use anywhere near that.
Oh, so you think there is an exaggeration in the media?
And it could be a certain way that they're just simply using water without thinking about it. But this is a small grower.
Uh-huh.
She sells unpasteurized almonds and walnuts, and she said it really doesn't have any relation to what they're doing. So I don't know if it matters who's growing it. But I love that information you gave about how much water for one item. That's super, super useful.
Yeah,
like that puts it in perspective.
Right.
I don't have that information of what they use, but she said it was nothing like it. So I can say that. So it might be exaggerated, and it might be just some of the big producers that just want to do it the quickest that they can, kind of thing.
Hey, that's a good opportunity to remind our listeners that we are not investigative journalists.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have the opportunity mm-hmm. to go and talk with the almond growers and measure the deepness of their wells or anything like this. We're just doing our research on internet. So don't trust us. Do your research. Talk with your neighbors.
Well,
and
just get inspired,
cousins.
But yes. Take it on another journey.
Well, that means we should not trust 60 Minutes either.
Right,
so.
right.
And that I think it's, you're doing fine.
Awesome. Thank you so much for calling in.
Yeah.
Yeah, thank you.
Have a good one.
Bye.
Thank you. Yeah. Another thing with almond is that almond growers notoriously put quantities of glyphosate, and this is lethal to bees. And in California, bees are dying in record numbers due to habitat loss and exposure to the pesticide that is used in industrialized almond industry. I mean, from where we live, I'm sure all our listeners at one point have gone through those almond fields.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Come on.
Yeah, yeah.
Come on. Most of us
Hard
have gone
miss.
Through it. We've seen it. It's just insanely monocroppy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, that means a lot of glyphosate has to be used. And they need a lot of bees to be able to pollinate the almond flowers to have the most fruits possible. So they bring all the bees of the country
right.
in March or May, I don't know when it is, to pollinate the almond trees. And then there is a huge amount of loss. We're talking about honeybees that are industrialized.
Right.
We're not talking about the wild ones there, but... Well, personally, I'm sorry, but my favorite is almond milk.
After all of that? After all of that, Dora.
Sorry.
Oh, man.
Yeah, but let's take a second to talk about the others, because I may adjust my choice. It is 9:51, though, so let's get into it.
Yeah. Let's get
What's
into it.
What's your favorite?
I honestly love macadamia nut milk. It's the richest and creamiest to me. The other nut milks can be watery, like the oat milks and things like that. Just taste a little absent. The macadamia nut is like rich. You know, you put that in your coffee. It's just good
stuff. Yeah. So whether you're opting out of dairy completely or just looking for an alternative from time to time, the choices are crazy. It could be even overwhelming. There are so many choices.
Oh, yeah. And strolling down the milk alternatives aisle at any grocery store will bombard you with different varieties and flavors. So don't let all of the greenwashing fool you. Not all milk alternatives are created equal, and some are just downright unhealthy.
Okay, wait. So there could be cereal-based, meaning oat, rice, corn, or spelt. I didn't know there was corn milk.
I didn't either, but doesn't it sound so good?
It's crazy.
Pascal's making a face like, no, thank you. I'm like, yes.
And then there is the legume base, soy, peanut, or peas. Then there is the nut base, almond, coconut, cashew, macadamia, hazelnut. Oh, that's the one I'm dreaming
mm-hmm.
for. Pistachio, walnut. Then there are the seed base, the sesame, flax, hemp, sunflower. And then the, let's say, pseudo-cereal-based, quinoa, teff, and amaranth. So that's 21 different types of alternative milk. So in there, you should find one that you like.
Right.
But each one of them have a different nutritional value, a consistency, and a flavor. So, yeah.
Got options, though, at least. And so the base of the plant milk is the first thing to consider. And most of the complications come from the possibility of preservatives and additives that can cause inflammation in our bodies.
Yeah. So, yeah, the whole product has no problem, but that's what they add to it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so because they are trying to appeal to dairy consumer, they turn to emulsifiers to replicate the creamy texture found in milk.
And adding these emulsifiers helps keep the plant-based milks shelf stable, which is why you'll find many of them on the shelves rather than in the refrigerator at the grocery store.
Which is cool.
It is. I know it is. Get a big load at grocery outlet of being able to stock up on some oat milk is actually kind of
it's
a luxury.
It's convenient, for sure.
So these emulsifiers include carrageenan, xanthan gum, and guar gum. Carrageenan is one of the more popular additives, and it thickens and stabilizes the milk, creating a creamy texture. However, it also has a dark side.
Okay, so for decades, it has been the subject of controversy for its short and long-term effects on human health. Some studies have demonstrated that it promotes inflammation. It has also been shown to be harmful to the gastrointestinal tract. And the World Health Organization classifies one type of carrageenan as a possible human carcinogen.
Eesh. And the gums found in some dairy alternatives include xanthan gum and guar gum, which are also great at stabilizing and thickening. And xanthan gum is the product of bacterial fermentation.
Seems good.
Often it is derived from common allergies, including wheat, corn, and soy.
From the allergens.
Allergens. Thank you so much. And this can be a concern for those who have food allergies or food sensitivities. Xanthan gum has also been studied for its effects on the gastrointestinal tract, and it has been shown to promote irritation and alter gut bacteria.
Yeah. So while the xanthan gum is derived from natural stuff, wheat, corn, and soil, guar gum gets its name from its source, guar beans. Mm. I'm like, yeah.
Beans. Yeah. What's going on? Yeah.
All right, but it is linked to digestive issues. Some of the gastrointestinal effects that have been observed from the consumption of guar gum include gas and bloating. We don't like that. Guar gum also has shown to have trace of soy, which could be a problem for those with sensitivities.
Guar gum is a member of the long list of items that were deemed safe for weight loss in the 1990s. What a wild time that was. It has the ability to mimic the feeling of being full, which in turn leads to less calorie consumption. And it's no wonder it was such a big hit in the diet pill industry.
The large amount of guar gum that was found in weight loss product may have led to weight loss. Okay, sure. But it also led to
esophageal and small bowel obstruction.
And this complication ultimately led the FDA to ban it in weight loss products. So you know what they did? They put it
Move
in
it
the
on over.
Alternatives.
Well, someone did not do their job well there. I don't know. I've got a bone to pick.
And so basically what we're saying is look at the ingredients of your alternative milk, because there might be one of those additives that is not good. And it's like you can find a brand without it.
Right. Maybe it's a little bit more expensive, but I feel like all of those plant-based milks are already, you know, have a little bit of a price markup. And
but is it even? Yeah. And so, in addition to these emulsifiers, obviously look at the sugar amount. This is a big issue when evaluating plant-based milks.
And added sugar almost always joins in with the flavors. So just take the extra time and look for unsweetened versions of your favorite plant-based milks.
And another thing to look at is the lecithin, because usually they put soy lecithin and it comes from soy, so most probably GMO soy, and so it is full of... Oh yeah, that's funny. Okay, wait. The soy lecithin, how do they do this? They have an extraction process that uses hexane. What? What is this? This is another gasoline compound. I'm like, what?
Yeah, just use it to make some food.
To make milk alternative. This is just, we live in a wild world, backwards. For sure.
Yeah,
and as we know, the GMO soy is full of glyphosate. So if you see soy lecithin, you can imagine glyphosate in your milk.
Mm-hmm. Additionally, a study that appeared a few years back in the New England Journal of Medicine showed that lecithin can raise levels of TMAO, which is a gut metabolite linked to heart disease. So really look for an alternative without emulsifiers in your alternative milk if you can. So Why not?
Yeah, another thing in the milk alternative is the oil. You look at the ingredients and there is an oil in there very often. If it's canola or safflower, same. Understand GMO, understand glyphosate. If it's sunflower, it might not be that bad. Well, we did an entire show about it, but just canola oil can contribute to Alzheimer's and heart disease, and the list would be long.
And we went into the natural flavors a little bit already, but they're found in many dairy alternatives, and they're not natural at all. These are just products that don't necessarily come straight from the earth, and they can be derived from animal or plant products, but later be synthetically enhanced with preservatives and other ingredients. So just be vigilant about the natural flavors.
Basically, like always, try organic if you can and read the ingredients. All right, that was The Choice Is Yours. See you next month.
Thanks for tuning in.
This has been a K-Mud podcast. To listen to other shows and more episodes of this show, find us on all the platforms where you get your podcast and also on our website, kmud.org.